meeting for a year, and then talk to them about the most frequently asked question in the field of nonviolence, which is, wouldn't have worked against Hitler, or what would you do against Hitler? Bad nonviolence. So, I would say, first of all, that one experience has shown me that to think of a situation where nonviolence would not work, and then your imagination, it fails, when you reject the whole field, is not realistic. And I've recommended to students quite often, start instead from a situation where not only nonviolence could work, but it did work. There are hundreds, if not thousands now, of real cases that show nonviolence being effective in many different situations. And I think the most scientific way to go about this is to start from there, figure out what made it work, what the thing is, and then progressively go to more and more difficult situations. Now, the great proponents of nonviolence, Martin Gandhi, Martin Luther King, and others, always insisted that there is no situation in which nonviolence would not work. But we're talking here about a situation where it not only has a deep changing effect on the situation that will show up down the road, but could it actually be used to forestall a horrendous violence such as was unleashed by the Nazis in World War II. And a scholar from Australia named Ralph Sinney addressed this question in the famous article called Nonviolence and the Case of the Extremely Ruthless Opponent, in which he showed from logic and from history that yes, there is a way that we can use nonviolence even in the most drastic situations, but of course it will be more costly if you wait that long. So the next question to ask ourselves in connection with nonviolence and some kind of horrendous or late stage threat like that posed by Hitler is when are we intervening? Obviously, the time to have prevented Nazism was in 1918 when very unfair, quote, peace, unquote, conditions were imposed on Germany, when the people were humiliated and starved and demoralized, and if that should not have been done, if that had not been done, Hitler would not have gotten any purchase and had any traction with the German people. If it had been done, if nonviolence had been used in the early years of his rise to power, it could have been done with relatively less cost. But even if we do wait until the very last stage, nonviolence is still not helpless. There are things that we can do. I'm going to mention quickly, briefly here, just two cases that are both, if you don't really know about them, they're both in my book, Search for a Nonviolent Future. The first and most important one to be aware of is known as the Rosenstrasse prison demonstration. R-O-S-E-N-S-T-R-A-W-S-E, Rosenstrasse prison demonstration. What happened there, we're talking about the end of March 1943. We're talking about Berlin. So there were a group of Jewish men who had not yet been arrested because they were married to Aryan women. Typically, they had some other connection that kept them out of the concentration camps up to that point. And Hitler ordered their arrest and deportation to the concentration camps. They were picked up in the early morning hours and taken to a detention center, which had formerly been a Jewish center in Berlin, which is on number 1/2 Rosenstrasse, Wall Street. And then something absolutely remarkable and unheard of happened. The wives, the mothers, the sisters of these men, they came down to the detention center and demonstrated outside the center and said, "We want our men back." This was only 2 blocks away from Gestapo headquarters. Gestapo came out and said, "We disband, go home, and we will kill you." But the women didn't move. And that left the Germans with a dilemma because things were not going well for them anyway. They just left the entire Sixth Army outside of actually took the case directly to the Fuhrer and asked, what can we do? And he refused to make a decision. So he remanded it back to some second, third level commanders. And they kept ordering the women to go back, but instead the women just accumulated more and more to 5 or 6,000 women demonstrating silently outside the detention center. And guess what? In the end, the Gestapo relented and released those men. Some of them were already packed off to concentration camps. They were identified, rounded up, and sent home. They were told, don't tell anything to anyone about what you saw here, and they were sent home. So we have a remarkable episode where several thousand men were saved by absolutely spontaneous, untrained, unplanned for, uncontinued uprising by a weak section of the society, the women, and it worked, quote unquote. It released those men. Now, when I used to talk about this episode in my classes, students would say, well, then what happened to the men after that? And I would say, you know, I don't know. I have to assume that they were quietly picked up one after another, one by one, and treated like everybody else. But then a wonderful book came out by Nathan Stoltzfus called Revolution of the Heart, and he showed that guess what? Those men lived right through the war. They were never arrested. Not only that, every occupied capital city in Europe had their eyes on Berlin because they had the same quote, problem, unquote. They had Jews who were connected with non-Jewish women and didn't know what to do with it. When Berlin relented, they never did arrest those men. So, I can't give you the numbers here, but I would guess that something like 50,000 or 60,000 Jews were saved from a fate of certain death by a spontaneous, untrained, unfinished demonstration that was not continued. There was no organization behind it except what they called the Jüdische Rundfunk, the German radio, the Jewish radio, which was basically amateur, and not very well on a phone chain. So when people tell you that non-violence would never have worked against Hitler, you should quietly say to them, well, as far as we know, on a more than individual scale, it was tried only once, and it worked brilliantly. So it does not make sense to say it wouldn't have worked, because in fact it did. The other case is a little simpler. It concerns a heroic martyr, Father Maximilian Kolbe, who was Polish. He's a Catholic priest, and Catholic priests were just a little bit above Jews in the racist hierarchy of the Germans. So he was also arrested, taken to Auschwitz. To make a long story short, men were being selected for execution one day, and Father Kolbe stepped up to the commander, Commandant Fritz, and said to him in perfect German, I have a favor to ask of you. Fritz was utterly startled. Prisoners did not do that. I said, okay, what do you want? And Kolbe said, I want to die in place of that man that you've just chosen. So Fritz said, all right, you can die. And they took him instead of that Polish commander, who incidentally lived to be 93 years old, and testified at the canonization of Father Kolbe, who's now known as the priest, the saint of Auschwitz. And Father Kolbe did die some 6 or so days later under the most horrible circumstances. So this is why I say this is a little more subtle. On one level you can say in this episode, non-violence didn't work, quote unquote. But the fact is that it did tremendously good work. Because in Auschwitz, the only thing that was keeping you alive, really, was some kind of will to live. The nutritional intake was below what a human being is supposed to need to survive. The conditions were, to say the least, intolerable. If you lost your will to live at Auschwitz, you generally died within a week. And that was very well observed. So when Father called made this sacrifice, which is so totally counterintuitive and against everything that people are trying to do and the way they're trying to think in a survival situation like that, to actually give up what everybody was desperately scrambling to hold on to his own life, had a galvanizing effect on those men. They said what the Nazis are telling us by their behavior, in other words, is not true. Humanity has not sunk into the dregs. There is such a thing as heroism and human spirit. And the men were psychologically deeply affected by Kobe's sacrifice. So that without him planning it, and this is very often what we see with nonviolence, without him planning it, again, he saved the life of thousands of people. Now, if we would like to do that without having to die in the process, the secret is to, A, learn about nonviolence, so we don't just find ourselves lost into the disasters, and B, for heaven's sake, wherever possible, intervene earlier in the situation and not ready to get to such an extreme. But the important point is that Andreas Nicholas, we know from history that nonviolence did work against the Nazis, and therefore we are not on any kind of ground to say that it wouldn't work against a similar threat or dictatorship elsewhere. As far as we know, there is no situation in which, on one level at least, if not on both, nonviolence could not be effective. Thanks very much.